At Private Clients by Old Mutual Wealth, we specialize in bespoke investment management for high net worth individuals, trusts, and companies. Our private client portfolio managers craft and manage tailored share portfolios, investing directly into high-quality companies, both locally and globally. We partner with you and your financial planner to ensure that you achieve your financial goals with peace of mind. Great to have you join us today as we talk more about the longevity economy and some investment opportunities that lie around this. Joining me today is the Chief Investment Officer at Private Clients by Old Mutual Wealth, Andrew Ditburner. Andrew, first of all, good to have you on the podcast. Welcome.
Thanks, Ian. It's great to chat to you again.
So it's no surprise, really, that human beings are living longer. And this really has created a whole new landscape, more opportunities. They call it the longevity economy. We'll come to that in a second. But really, it's changing the way that we think about aging. And it's not just about older people either. It's a bit of a shift from a world mostly of young people to a world with more seniors added to the fold. Surprisingly, those over 50 are now big contributors to the global economy. They're bringing in trillions of dollars worldwide. And it's challenging the old idea that old people are just a burden on society. Let's start by contextualizing that, Andrew, and talk about the longevity economy. Give us a snapshot of what that means from your point of view.
Yeah, so, you know, if you look over time, I suppose people are growing older or living longer, rather. So if you see life expectancy, you know, going back to the 1800s, you know, life expectancy, if you look at developed countries or developing countries, has been increasing steadily over that time. There's been a couple of blips along the way. But, you know, typically, if you look back to the early 1900s, you know, it's been all about infants, vaccinations, improving healthcare, and therefore growing younger populations. And what we've seen probably, you know, in the last 20 odd years is that as healthcare improves, we've seen populations grow older because healthcare is able to look after older people from curing and preventing diseases. And as a result, I mean, it's common knowledge, I think, that the world's population is growing older. We see that particularly in developed countries. And we've got to be thinking about that, you know, how does that impact the economy? And as a result, you know, what will the opportunities be for investors? So typically, I think the traditional view is that older populations are bad for the economy for a number of reasons. I'm sure we can touch on it. But I think we actually start thinking a little bit differently about that. I think there are opportunities, and I think it could be a very good thing, actually, for the long-term economic growth as populations grow older.
Okay, it's a great place to get going. Let's break that into a two-part question here. The first of those is the challenges, and the second of those is the opportunities. Let's speak about the challenges of an aging population. What are those that come to mind and are pressing in this context?
Yeah, so I suppose the immediate one that would jump to mind would be labor shortage. You know, so as populations grow older and hit retirement age, you're going to have fewer and fewer people working. And if you think about what drives economic growth, it's two things, productivity and population. So an older population, you know, in the traditional sense or the traditional view is that, you know, that would be a negative. The other obvious one is your fiscal constraints that it might place on or burden that it might place on the economy, given that, you know, pensions, people need pensions if they're living longer. If you don't have your own pension and the state provides a pension for you, that will also put a fiscal constraint. And then you touched also on healthcare. Now the healthcare constraints of having to look after older populations for longer. The third one is, you know, and I'm not sure I buy into this one, but there's also a lack of innovation. You know, as people grow older and they're not learning anymore because we still subscribe to this three-stage life model where you know, go to school or university and you learn, then you work for 30 or 40 years and then you stop working, stop learning, stop, you know, innovating and hit your retirement age. You know, so that would be another challenge, I suppose, that in the traditional sense or the traditional view, a older population would place on the economy.
It's an interesting imbalance that you brought up there. You touched on briefly when under challenges, under that heading, with less new human beings being born and an aging population getting heavier, that imbalance is starting to show. And I guess that's the crux of what we're talking about here. That's very interesting for me. I'd like to then turn to the opportunities, because I can see a lot of people rubbing their hands in glee with opportunities here with an aging population. I'm really curious to know what those opportunities might be.
Well, yeah. So if we come back, you know, to the healthcare story and, you know, improving healthcare, new medicines, people wanting to be healthier at a younger age in order to live longer, ultimately what it's leading to is a more economically active older population. So, you know, the evidence shows, you know, that for 50 plus or people of the age of 50 or more are playing a far larger role in economic activity. You can look at it from their contribution to GDP, how that's grown over time, you know, their spend and the number of jobs that supports. And also we know that older people tend to be wealthier. So you've got cross-border spend as well, you know, that they're making up a larger and larger part. So as people are healthier, and I mentioned the, you know, three-stage model that we subscribe to, you know, we actually need to move more to a multi-stage, you know, model where it's one that involves continuous learning through your lifestyle. You don't have to stop working when you hit retirement age of, you know, 60, 65, wherever it is, and depending what country you live in. And actually, you know, companies enabling older or older people to work longer, you know, changing their working conditions to allow them to do that. And all of these, you know, would suggest that actually having a healthier, which I think is the key to this, having a healthier older population is actually beneficial to the economy rather than being a drag on it.
And also the benefit, I guess, and it might not be a financial one, but it certainly eventually filters down, is that aging population have the experience. They have the know-how to have done what they've done throughout their life. And you mentioned education. I mean, that feeds into somebody with experience is hugely valuable when it comes to being able to teach other people, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. There was actually a podcast that I was listening to the other day on Boeing, and they're talking about exactly that, where, you know, we know Boeing's had a number of issues around certain airplanes in recent times, but they're also not producing any new airplanes at the moment. And the cycle, they were saying, you know, to produce a new aircraft is around about 10 years. And if they've got nothing in the pipeline now for the next 10 years, you know, they're not going to be producing new aircraft. Engineers who have the experience of actually having produced new aircraft are, you know, reaching retirement age, they're moving on, and as a result they're losing all of that experience, right, you know, because of those long lead times. So you can see how, I suppose, experience plays a massive role. And companies need to ensure that their work environment caters you know, to older workers, older employees. And there's a couple of really nice examples. I mean, I've just spoken about Boeing. But BMW have done something similar in recent times, where they've allowed work rotations, being flexible around work hours, you know, ensuring that the tools that workers use to produce vehicles are easier to use for older people, making them more comfortable, from giving them specific shoes to wear, etc. And this allows, you know, they've seen it in their numbers from an absentee perspective amongst older employees has dropped significantly, and as a result, their productivity has improved. You know, so yeah, experience keeping your older employees is definitely a huge advantage. Yeah.
So I hope I'm not putting you on the spot here, but I mean, does that not challenge the traditional notion of the fact that 65 is retirement age? I mean, surely now that must be getting older, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I'm sure you and I both know many people that are older than 60 that are, you know, in the prime of their life in terms of, you know, working, and that they're able to work. And, you know, we've seen evidence of countries changing their retirement age policies. Just France, was it last year or the year before, started to increase their retirement age. I think they're doing it over a number of years, increasing from 62 to 64. It was met with a bit of pushback, but they need to do it to look after their pensions system, as well as align people who are still very able to contribute to the economy to work longer. So absolutely, we need to start thinking differently and moving in that direction.
Okay, let's talk investment for a second here. I want to know about the investing side of stuff. How can investors capitalize on this longevity economy?
So, you know, if you just think about it from a top-down perspective, and I mentioned it earlier, you know, the two key inputs for economic growth being productivity and populations. You know, the longevity economy plays into both of those, right? Allowing people to be more productive for longer, as well as populations is still growing, and despite growing older. So that's good for long-term economic growth. And we know that long-term economic growth is good for, is ultimately the number one driver of equity markets, because that's going to allow companies to grow their earnings, which is going to drive equity markets. So just from a high-level, top-down view, it's provided aging populations are productive. That's a net-net win for investors. But then you can go and look at specific opportunities and think, well, you know, what do the consumption patterns look like, you know, for older older populations? You know, how do people spending differ for a 70-year-old versus a 20-year-old? You know, and there's some obvious examples around that. You just think about, you know, homeowners versus renters. You know, older populations typically own homes in many parts of the world. The young populations can't afford to buy homes. So, you know, you're going to look at maintenance costs on homes, people spending money on their homes as opposed to spending elsewhere. You know, so that's one clear example. I know, you know, I'll use my own experience. My mom's in the 70s, you know, and she spends very wisely, but she spends on the necessities of life. And when she does spend on luxury, she probably spends more on the premium side. You know, so the premiumization theme comes through, but at the same time, you know, they probably spend more of their money on necessities. Technology is another one. We think that it's just young people that like to sit in front of their screens and watch Netflix or Showmax or whatever it is. But the evidence shows that, you know, increasingly older people are actually spending more time in front of their screens. So whether it's streaming or buying the latest, you know, iPhones, gadgets. And then you've got to also think about, it's not just about where they spend, but what companies are benefiting, you know, from either enabling people to live longer. So you can think about healthcare businesses, you know, and it's not just your pharmaceutical companies, but, you know, take a company like Stryker, produces medical equipment for doctors, hospitals, etc., as well as medical products that that people need to put in their body to enable them to move, whether it's hip replacements, knee replacements, those sorts of things. So there's a plethora of opportunities that this long-term tailwind should produce for investors.
So from an old mutual wealth point of view, how are you guys kind of positioning your local and your global investment portfolios to capitalize on this aging population?
So in South Africa, the opportunities are probably a little less because we know that our population here is younger. We've still got a growing young population. Our older population is not necessarily as, I don't want to use the word healthy, but we haven't had the health benefits that many of the developed nations have seen come through for the wider population. So opportunities, and obviously our local markets from our opportunity set is far narrower than what you get abroad. So I think the opportunities locally are, you know, far more nuanced. We can think about Clicks, for example, is a nice example. That's not necessarily helping the older population, but it's enabling longevity. I see my wife goes and spends money on supplements to, you know, keep you healthier, hopefully allow you to miss the flu during the winter seasons. Those sorts of things, you know, they sell all those supplements. You've got a company like Remgro that sits in our portfolio. They're exposed to Mediclinic. It used to be listed. Mediclinic has exposure to Europe and the Middle East, which has an older population relative to South Africa. So you get that sort of exposure there. A storage, the local storage company, as older people retire and downsize, they need place to, you know, to store their goods. And then from a financial services perspective, you need increasing life insurance as you grow older. So a company like Sanlam, you know, would be expected to benefit. But as I say, the opportunities within South Africa probably is slightly less. If you go globally, I mean, there's a huge amount of opportunity. just in our portfolios. I mean, I spoke about Stryker earlier. You know, that's a company that sits in our portfolio. You've got a company like Danaher, which has a biotechnology business, you know, which is looking at curing diseases, preventing diseases. They've got a diagnostics business, which will obviously benefit as people grow older. I spoke a bit about Athleisure, you know, a company like Nike, as people want to stay healthier, run, exercise to enable that longevity. And then we've got, you know, a number of the big tech companies I mentioned earlier that older people do like to also spend quite a bit of time in front of screens. Yeah. And they're luxury goods. You know, older people do, when they do spend on luxury, as I mentioned, they tend to go for more premium goods and also travel. You know, I'll use my own case, my own example again with my mom. You know, she travels a lot more now that she's retired and has the time and ability to do that. You know, so there'll be those opportunities in cross-border spend, which plays into the hands of a company like Visa, which obviously when you travel, you're taking your credit card, you're spending abroad fairly seamlessly. And that's another business that's been in our portfolio for a long time. So there's a huge amount of opportunities, as I mentioned, that the global market set presents investors.
I'm just painting a picture in my mind here. You said a number of key words. One of them that piqued my interest was premium. Because at that stage in life, you know, if you're in your 70s and you have the means, why travel economy when you can afford business? You know, why buy something that's cheaper when you have the means to be able to afford it, to buy more premium? That's an interesting one. You mentioned Remgro earlier on. I mean, premium brands, they must be absolutely coining it when it comes to that segment of the market, because I think that's a real consideration for people who are, you know, in the later years of their lives.
Yeah, premiumization is a big topic at the moment, something that we've spoken about a lot and that in various places in our portfolios, you'll see that theme coming through quite strongly. Another area that it comes through, we move in a bit off the longevity discussion.
Is
Diageo, which is the drinks business. You know, so instead of drinking,
give me all the whiskey.
Or three ships, people are going to shift to Johnny Walker, drink more upmarket alcohol or alcoholic drinks. You can think of a number of tequilas that play to that space. You know, Apple is a premium brand. You know, instead of people buying the cheapest smartphone, you know, Apple or Apple Watches, Apple iPhones, you know, those are seen as alongside Samsung, which isn't in our portfolio, but Apple is. You know, those are seen as the premium, you know, brands in that space. So there's definitely a shift, you know, whether it's, you know, virtual signaling or, you know, that people want to be seen to have premium goods. But yeah, you know, if you can afford it, and generally the older population can, they're going to move in that direction.
What an interesting way to look at this. When I read the research that had been done beforehand, the obvious ones come up. That's what we started with. The healthcare, you know, the aging population needing more healthcare and more attention, etc. When you start to get into the nuances, like you've just done now, and talk about premium products, etc., suddenly that scope becomes a lot wider and a lot more interesting, doesn't it? It's a fascinating discussion.
Yeah. So, I mean, exactly. There's probably two ways to think about it, and the obvious one, which would probably go at first, you know, is companies that are enabling people to live longer, and you know, those are healthcare businesses, anything that plays to improving healthcare or health in general. And then on the other side of it, you've got to think about how consumption patterns are changing and which companies are going to benefit as a result of that. So you've got to come at it from, I suppose, those two angles, and you'll very quickly see that, yeah, there's a big opportunity, and I think a long-term tailwind for the economy and as a result for investors.
Andrew, what an interesting discussion. You've covered a lot of the questions that I had. I'm going to leave it there and say thank you for pointing all of these out. Of course, you can get in touch with the folks at Old Mutual Wealth. Andrew Ditburner, the Chief Investment Officer at Private Clients, thanks for your time. And thanks for your insight into a rather fascinating section of investment that before this discussion, I never really considered, to be perfectly honest. So thank you.
Okay, thanks, Ian. Pleasure to see you.
At Private Clients by Old Mutual Wealth, we craft portfolios using a global and unbiased investment approach, allowing us to seek investment opportunities across asset classes, sectors, and geographies. We believe that quality, valuation, diversification, and time are the key drivers of superior long-term returns. As such, we invest in quality companies with a long-term track record of delivering sustainable earnings growth. Our investment philosophy is supported by a disciplined and robust investment process and is backed by a highly experienced and talented team.